spends a lifetime begging for acceptance into the same government that made slaves of his people. He gives his life for a country that made his people slaves, and still confines them to the role of second-class citizens. And we feel that he wastes his time begging white politicians, political hypocrites, for civil rights, or for some kind of first-class citizenship. He's like a watchdog or a hound dog. You may run into a dog. No matter how vicious a dog is, you find him out in the street, he won't bite you. But when you get him up on the porch, he will growl. He'll take your leg. Now that dog, when he's out in the street, only his own life is threatened. And he's never been trained to protect himself. He's only been trained by his master to think in terms of what's good for his master. So when you catch him in the street and you threaten him, he'll go around you. But when you come up on the through the gate when he's sitting on the master's porch, then he'll bare his fangs and get ready to bite you. Not because you're threatening him, but because you're threatening his master, who has trained him not to protect himself, but to protect the property of the master. And this type of 20th century Uncle Tom is the same way. He'll never attack you, but he'll attack me. I can run into him out in the street and blast him. He won't say a word. But if I look like I'm about to blast you in here, he'll open up his mouth and put up a better defense for you than you can put up for yourself. Because he hasn't been trained to defend himself. He has only been trained to open up his mouth in defense of his master. He hasn't been educated, he's been trained. When a man is educated, he can think for himself and defend himself and speak for himself. But this 20th century Uncle Tom Negro never opens up his mouth in defense of a black man. He opens up his mouth in defense of the white man, in defense of America, in defense of the American government. He doesn't even know where his government is because he doesn't know that he ever had one. He doesn't know where his country is because he doesn't know that he ever had one. He believes in exactly what he was taught in school. That when he was kidnapped by the white man, he was a savage in the jungle someplace eating people and throwing spears and with a bone in his nose. And the average American Negro has that concept of the African continent. It is not his fault. This is what has been given to him by the American educational system. He doesn't realize that there were civilizations and cultures on the African continent at a time when the people in Europe were crawling around in the caves going naked. He doesn't realize that the black man in Africa was wearing silk, was wearing slippers that he was able to spin himself, make himself, at a time when the people up in Europe were going naked. He doesn't realize that he was living in palaces on the African continent when the people in Europe were living in caves. He doesn't realize that he was living in a civilization in Africa where science had been so far advanced, especially even the astronomical sciences, to a point where Africans could plot the course of the stars in the universe when the people up in Europe still thought the Earth was round, the planet was round, or flat. He doesn't realize the advancement and the high state of his own culture that he was living in before he was kidnapped and brought to this country by the white man. He knows nothing about that. He knows nothing about the ancient Egyptian civilization on the African continent, or the ancient Carthaginian civilization on the African continent, or the ancient civilizations of Mali on the African continent. Civilizations that were highly developed and produced scientists. Timbuktu, the center of the Mali Empire, was the center of learning at a time when the people up in Europe didn't even know what a book was. He doesn't know this because he hasn't been taught. And because he doesn't know this, when you mention Africa to him, well, he thinks you're talking about a jungle. And I went to Africa in 1959 and didn't see any jungle and didn't see any mud huts until I got back to Harlem in New York City. So you're familiar with that type of Negro. And the black man that you're not familiar with is the one that we would like to point out now. He's the new type. He's the type that seldom the white man ever comes in contact with. And when you do come in contact with him, you're shocked because you didn't know that this type of black man existed. And immediately you think, well, here's one of those black supremacists or racists or extremists who believe in violence and all that old kind of, well, that's what they call it. This new type of black man, he doesn't want integration. He wants separation. Not segregation, separation. To him, segregation, as we're taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, means that which is forced upon inferiors by superiors. A segregated community is a Negro community. But the white community, though it's all white, it's never called a segregated community. It's a separate community. In the white community, the white man controls the economy, his own politics, his own everything. That's his community. But at the same time, all the Negro lives in a separate community. It's a segregated community, which means it's regulated from the outside by outsiders. The white man has all of the businesses in the Negro community. He runs the politics of the Negro community. He controls all the civic organizations in the Negro community. This is a segregated community. We don't go for segregation. We go for separation. Separation is when you have your own. You control your own economy. You control your own politics. You control your own society. You control your own everything. You have yours and you control yours. We have ours and we control ours. They don't call Chinatown in New York City or on the West Coast a segregated community. Yes, yet it's all Chinese. But the Chinese control it. Chinese voluntarily live there. They control it. They run it. They have their own schools. They control their own politics, control their own industry. And they don't feel like they're being made inferior because they have to live to themselves. They choose to live to themselves. They live there voluntarily. And they are doing for themselves in their community the same thing you do for yourself in your community. This makes them equal because they have what you have. But if they didn't have what you have, then they'd be controlled from your side, even though they would be on their side. They'd be controlled from your side by you. So when we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say that we're for separation, it should be emphasized, we're not for segregation, we're for separation. We want the same for ourselves as you have for yourself. And when we get it, then it's possible to think more intelligently, terms that are along peaceful lines. But a man who doesn't have what is his, he can never think always in terms that are along peaceful lines. This new type rejects the white man's Christian religion. He recognizes the real enemy. That Uncle Tom can't see his enemy. He thinks his friend is his enemy and his enemy is his friend. And he usually ends up loving his enemy, turning his other cheek to his enemy. But this new type, he doesn't turn the other cheek to anybody. He doesn't believe in any kind of peaceful suffering. He believes in obeying the law. He believes in respecting people. He believes in doing unto others as he would have done unto himself. But at the same time, if anybody attacks him, he believes in retaliating if it costs him his life. And it is good for white people to know this, because if white people get the impression that Negroes all endorse this old turn-the-other-cheek, cowardly philosophy of Dr. Martin Luther King, then whites are going to make the mistake of putting their hands on some black man thinking that he's going to turn the other cheek and he'll end up losing his hand and losing his life in the tribe. So it is always better to let someone know where you stand. And there are a large number of black people in this country who don't endorse anything of what Dr. Martin Luther King and these other 20th century religious Uncle Toms are putting in front of the public eye to make it look like this is the way, this is the behavior, or this is the thought pattern of most of our people. Also, this new type, you'll find, he doesn't look upon it as being any honor to be in America. He knows he didn't come here on the Mayflower. He knows he was brought here in a slave ship. But this 20th century Uncle Tom, he'll stand up in your face and tell you about when his fathers landed on Plymouth Rock. His father never landed on Plymouth Rock. The rock was dropped on him, but it wasn't dropped on him. So this type doesn't make any apology for being in America, nor does he make any apology for the problem his presence in America presents for Uncle Sam. He knows he was brought here in chains, and he knows he was brought here against his will. He knows that the problem itself was created by the white man, and that it was created because the white man brought us here in chains against our will. It was a crime. And the one who committed that crime is the criminal today who should pay for the crime that was committed. You don't put the crime in jail. You put the criminal in jail. And kidnapping is a crime. Slavery is a crime. Lynching is a crime. And the presence of 20 million black people in America against their will is a living witness or living testimony of the crime that Uncle Sam committed, your forefathers committed, when our people were brought here in chains. And the reason the problem can't be solved today is you try and dress it up and doctor it up and make it look like a favor was done to the black man by having brought the black man here. But when you realize that it was a crime that was committed, then you approach the solution to that problem in a different light, and then you can probably solve it. And as long as you think Negroes are running around here ugly opinion that you're doing them a favor, by letting them have some of this and letting them have some of that. Why, naturally, every time you give a little bit more justice or freedom to the black man, you stick out your chest and say, see, we're solving the problem. You're not doing the black man any favor. If you stick a knife in my back, if you pull it in 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, you haven't done me any favor. If you pull it all the way out, you haven't done me any favor. And this is what you have to realize. If you put a man in jail against his will, illegally, he's not guilty, you frame him up, and then because he resents what you've done to him, you put him in solitary confinement to break his spirit, after his spirit is broken, you let him out a little bit and give him the general run of the prison, you haven't done him any favor. If you let him out of prison completely, you haven't done him any favor because you put him in there unjustly and illegally in the first place. Now you have 20 million black people in this country who were brought here and put in a political, economic, and mental prison. This was done by Uncle Sam. And today you don't realize what a crime your forefathers have committed. And you think that when you open the door a few cracks and give this little integration an intoxicated Negro a chance to run around in the prison yard, that's all he's doing, that you're doing him a favor. But as long as he has to look up to someone who doesn't represent him and who doesn't speak for him, that person only represents the warden. It doesn't represent some kind of president or mayor or governor or senator or congressman or anything else. So this new type, the fact has to be faced that he exists, especially since he's in the house. And he didn't come here against his will, so you have to take the blame for his being here. And once you take the blame, then it's more easy. It's easier for you to approach the problem more sensibly and try and get a solution. And the solution can never be based upon hypocrisy. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that this solution has to be based upon reality. Tokenism is hypocrisy. One little student in the University of Mississippi, that's hypocrisy. A handful of students in Little Rock, Arkansas, is hypocrisy. A couple students going to school in Georgia is hypocrisy. Integration in America is hypocrisy in the rawest form, and the whole world can see it. All this little tokenism that is dangled in front of the Negro, and then he's told, see what we're doing for you, Tom. Why, the whole world can see that this is nothing but hypocrisy, and all you do is make your image worse. You don't make it better. So again, this new type, as I say, he rejects the white man's Christian religion. You find in large numbers they're turning toward the religion of Islam. They're becoming Muslims, believing in one God whose proper name is Allah, and Muhammad as his apostle, and turning toward Mecca, praying 5 times a day, fasting during Ramadan, and all of the other principles that are laid out by the religion of Islam. He's becoming a Muslim, and just as I think it was Dr. Billy Graham who made a crusade through Africa and came back and said that Islam is sweeping through Africa, outnumbering Christianity in converts 11 to 1, which means every time one African becomes a Christian, 11 of them become a Muslim. And then that one who became a Christian, he forgets it and goes on to be a Muslim too. and Bishop Pike pointed out the same thing in Look magazine in December 1960, and then Time magazine. Heaven forbid that I should mention that magazine, but Time magazine... Time magazine mentioned in 2 weeks ago that Islam is sweeping throughout Africa. And just as it is sweeping throughout the black people of Africa, it's sweeping throughout the black people right here in America. Only the one who's teaching it here in America is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He is the religious leader, the religious teacher. He is the one that is spreading the religion of Islam among the slaves, ex-slaves, here in America. You have Muslims who have come to this country from the Muslim world. There are probably 200,000 Muslims in this country from the Muslim world, who were born in the Muslim world. And all of them combined have never been able to convert 100 Americans to the religion of Islam. Yet it's the nature of Islam to propagate the faith, to spread the faith, to make everyone bear witness that there's no God but Allah and Muhammad is his apostle. And if you find all of the Muslim world who come here, unable or incapable of turning the American people toward Allah and toward Mecca and toward Islam, and then this little black man from the cotton fields of Georgia is able to stand up and get black people by the hundreds of thousands to turn toward Mecca five times a day and give praise to Allah and come together in unity and harmony, well, you'd have to be out of your mind to think that people of the Muslim world don't recognize the wonderful religious and spiritual accomplishment that's being achieved here among the so-called Negroes by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I take time to mention that because the propagandists try and convey the picture that we're not Muslims, we're not religiously motivated, and that we are in no way identified or recognized or connected with our people of the Muslim world. Well, if they didn't recognize us, we wouldn't care. We're not particularly looking for recognition. We're looking for recognition from Allah, from God. And if Allah accepts you as a Muslim, you're accepted. It's not left up to somebody walking around here on this earth. But those people over there would be out of their mind when they find themselves unable to spread the religion of Islam, and then they see this little black man here in America spreading it, they'd be out of their mind to reject him. And you'll find, if you take the time to look, that you don't find any Muslim today who rejects another Muslim. You might find some that who come over here who operate stores or some kind of little business in the white neighborhood, Christian neighborhood, and they want to get along with all the white people, but all the Christians. They might say some words to please you, but they're only trying to get your money. So the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad look to him and what he teaches, his program and his message, as our only solution. And they see separation as our only salvation. We don't think as Americans anymore, but as a black man. With the mind of a black man, we look beyond America, and we look beyond the interests of the white man. The thinking of this new type of Negro is broad. It's more international. This integrationist always thinks in terms of an American. But you find the masses of black people today think in terms of black. And this black thinking enables them to see beyond the confines of America, all over the world. They look at the happenings in the international context by this little integrationist Negro thinking locally, by his thinking and desires being confined to America. He's limited. He's the underdog. He's the minority. But the masses of black people who have been exposed to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, their thinking is more international. They look around this earth and they see that the majority of the people on this earth are dark. And by seeing that the majority of the people on this earth are dark, they don't regard themselves as a minority in America. But rather, they regard themselves as part of that vast, dark majority. So therefore, when you run into that type of black man, he doesn't speak as an underdog. He doesn't speak like you outnumber him, or he doesn't speak like there's any harm that you can do to him. He speaks as one who outnumbers you. He sees that the dark world outnumbers the white world, that the odds have turned today and are in his favor, that are on his side. He sees that the people of this earth are on his side, that time is on his side, that history is on his side, and most important of all, he sees that God is on his side toward getting him some kind of solution that's immediate and that's lasting and that is in no way connected or concerned or stems from the goodwill or good conscience in any way, shape, soever of the man who committed the crime and created the problem in the first place. I would like to point out quickly and briefly. No, I want to. I think my time is up, isn't it?
Just about.
Well, doctor here says my time is up, and I'm telling him his time is short. So. So I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
There are many different ways to understand politics. Number one, we're not a political group. We're not politically inclined, motivated, nor are our political aims in any way connected with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But when you study the science of politics, or study it as it's practiced in the UN at the international level, you'll find usually on questions you have those who say yes, those who say no, and those who don't say anything. Those who don't say anything usually are the neutralists. And by abstaining, they have just as much political power, if not more so, than those who take an active part in all situations. Where the Negro in America is concerned, he's been without the ballot so long, today when he gets the ballot, he's ballot happy. He's like a man to whom you give a gun, he just starts shooting to let everybody know he's got a gun. He doesn't aim at anything. Well, we believe in shooting too, but we first believe that we should have a target, and then when that target gets within our reach, then we'll put the bullet where it belongs, or the ballot where it belongs, or whatever you call it, where it belongs. But we don't see at this point where the black man gains anything in politics. Let me just give you an example. And in the last presidential election, whites were evenly divided between Kennedy and Nixon. It was the Negro who went for Kennedy, 80%, that put Kennedy in the White House. And they went for him based upon the promises, false promises, by the way, that he made. Well, facts are facts. He said he I think everybody has a right to his opinion. And I'm quite certain those who are familiar with Kennedy's promises to the Negro know what he said he could do with the stroke of his pen. And he was in office for 2 years before he found where his fountain pen was, where the Negro was concerned. And the excuse that he used was that he first had to change the attitude of Southern segregation. Now, he didn't tell you that when he asked you to vote for him. But once he got in, then he had to tell you what problems he was facing. And he didn't want to take a stand against the Southern segregationists. But he did take a stand against U.S. Steel, which is the strongest corporation on this earth. He threw down the gauntlet. He threw down the gauntlet to Cuba. He has thrown down the gauntlet to anybody he's desired. But when it comes to the Negro, he's always got an alibi that puts him off until a little while later. So this is why we don't believe in any white politicians or anything like that can solve our problem. We'll get together among ourselves with these students who go to these colleges and get equipped and solve the problem for ourselves. I think that you'll find that the Negro leadership across the country classified the ultimate document that he signed as something absolutely worthless insofar as the housing conditions for Negroes. Just another political trick. Whenever you send 15,000 troops and spend $6 or $7 million just to put one Negro in the midst of some yapping wolves, you haven't done that Negro nor the masses of black people any favor, nor have you solved the problem. If it's legal and just and right for Meredith to be at the University of Mississippi, according to Robert Kennedy, the Attorney General, and all of the others, then every other black man in Mississippi has just as much right to be there. So if you're going to spend all that money and all that manpower putting one in there, why not just go in and take the criminals who are responsible for keeping the masses out and taking them down off their posts and then opening the doors to everybody? That would be a solution, but they're not going to do that. They always want to use methods that put one Negro at a time. And then they use him to turn around and tell the masses, you see, we're solving the problem and the problem is still unsolved. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says the only way to solve the problem for the so-called Negro is complete separation. May I explain it, Doctor?
Sure, go right ahead. The Honorable Duncan says, yeah, go ahead.
The Honorable Brother Duncan here says, I can proceed. Number one, what Mr. Muhammad says is this, that every effort on the part of the government up to now to solve this problem by bringing about a just, equitable situation between whites and blacks mixed up together here in this house has failed. It has failed absolutely. So he says that since you can't give the Negro justice in your house, let us leave this house and go back home. Now, at the same time that he says, let us go back home to our own people in our own homeland, the government itself is the leading opposer toward any mass element of black people becoming orientated in the direction of home. They put forth the effort to stop this. So what he says is, since you can't give it to us here, mixed up in your house, and you don't want us to go home, back to our own people, then the only alternative is to separate the house. Give us part of this country and let us live in that part. You ask me to explain. Now, you want me to explain? You may think it's funny, but one of these days you won't.
Come on, hold it.
He says that in this section that will be set aside for black people, that the government should give us everything we need to start our own civilization. They should give us everything we need to exist for the next 25 years. When you stop and consider the... You shouldn't be shocked. You give Latin America $20 billion, and they never fought for this country. They never worked for this country. You send billions of dollars to Poland and to Hungary. They're communist countries. They never contributed anything there. This is what you should realize. The greatest contribution to this country was that which was contributed by the black man. If I take the wages, just a moment, if I take the wages of everyone here, individually, it means nothing. But collectively, all of the earning power or wages that you earn in 1 week would make me wealthy. And if I could collect it for a year, I'd be rich beyond dreams. Now, when you see this, and then you stop and consider the wages that were kept back from millions of black people, not for 1 year, but for 310 years, you'll see how this country got so rich so fast, and what made the economy as strong as it is today. And all of that slave labor that was amassed in unpaid wages is due someone today, and you're not giving us anything when we say that it's time to collect.